From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar.
If something like a ban on a bank or currency use follows, it will amount to a declaration of economic war.
That was Russia's Prime Minister Dmitry Medvedev speaking on Friday in Kamchatka, Russia, about the latest announced U.S. sanctions against his country.
And it will warrant a response with economic means, political means, and if necessary, other means. Our American friends should understand that.
For a deeper understanding of the present regime of U.S. sanctions against Russia and the history of U.S. economic warfare against Russia and the Soviet Union, we spoke with Mark Sloboda, senior lecturer at Moscow State University on international relations. We spoke with him via Skype from Moscow Friday.
Certainly economic warfare. I mean, the U.S. has been waging that against, the Soviet Union. Aside from a brief period in the 1990s under Yeltsin, which the U.S. helped keep in power when the U.S. was meddling in Russian elections in 1996. And the cover of Time magazine proudly proclaims we saved Russia, yep, i.e. from itself,
right,
in a election that is widely regarded in Russia by academics, experts, to have been rigged, and that the communist challenger Zhuganov probably should have actually won that election. But
yep,
but that aside, I mean,
right,
at the start of the Bolshevik Revolution, I mean, in 1919, during the Polar Bear Expedition, as it's quite interestingly termed in the United States, the U.S., United Kingdom, other Western powers, and Japan actually invaded the Soviet Union in an attempt to strangle it in its cradle, as it were.
Right.
Something that failed after about a year of various efforts that even included Winston Churchill, then as the Secretary of War for the then still British Empire, to use chemical weapons on Russian villages, something that has only recently been fully admitted to in the pages of The Guardian and elsewhere. But economic war has been more oft the method of pursuit. And it certainly has increased in recent days. Now, you have to understand that Russia and the United States do not actually do a lot of trade.
Right.
Last year, the total trade between the two countries was a rather paltry, about $20 billion worth going both ways.
Right.
And that's a large trade deficit on the towards Russia.
Right.
The U.S. buys amazingly more from Russia than Russia does from the United States. A big portion of that is actually gasoline.
Right.
Russia is the number two country that the United States imports processed gasoline from. As a result of these latest sanctions, if they come to full fruition in the fall, then expect your gasoline prices to be going up in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
But this latest round of sanctions, this comes on the heels of about four or five rounds of sanctions so far that have been leveled on Russia in just the last 2 years, just over three if we count the Sergei Magnitsky Act as well.
Mm.
Most of them under extremely dubious provenance. Be that this Sergei Magnitsky Act, which is a pretty much fiction concocted by the vulture neoliberal capitalist Bill Browder, who has a personal vendetta against the Russian government because he made off sweetly in the 90s raiding the country and sucking as much out of it as he could, like some type of vampire squid.
Yeah.
But when Putin became president, he quickly put an end to that. And
right.
Browder, having avoided paying any taxes to the Russian government on the money he was making, fled the country. His accountant, he presents him as a lawyer. He was actually his accountant at the time. Sergei Magnitsky, a Russian citizen, was arrested and died in prison. He was already of ill health when he went into prison. The story of that facilitated these sanctions is that he was killed in prison. The more realistic version is that he was denied maybe some advanced medical care that might have saved his life from already existing conditions. And that maybe is the most likely scenario of what resulted in his death, which you can still find some fault with, but certainly.
Well, it sounds like he had an American insurance company's health plan. They didn't include pre-existing conditions, that's conditions. All.
It's certainly not something you sanction an entire country.
Right.
That was just a pretext, and I think it's widely known. So then we've seen sanctions for the supposed meddling in the U.S. elections, the brainwashing of the naive and gullible American people who are tricked into voting against their own best interest by Facebook memes about puppies and so on.
Right.
Then we saw a 60 diplomats kicked out of the United States, 60 Russian diplomats. This was then followed up with much smaller numbers by most of the countries of the European Union and Canada as well, a few other allied countries, the West, as it were, supposedly over a chemical weapon attack on a former British double agent, Sergei Skripal. And his daughter, supposedly with a military-grade toxin, a super-secret toxin developed in the Soviet Union, which the United Kingdom, the British government, tried to claim only Russia could have.
Right.
And that this is supposed to be 10 times more powerful than VX, a nerve agent that the New York Times termed as too deadly to use.
Right.
Except for the fact that neither of the Skripals died.
No, and one of them wants to go back to Russia.
Yeah.
The daughter.
But they are being held incommunicado in CIA custody somewhere, evidently.
Yeah.
But this latest round of sanctions is supposedly once again over that. And the reason for that is kind of an obscure 1991 law, the Chemical and Biological Weapons Control and Warfare Elimination Act. And this was created back in 1991, when the Soviet Union was collapsing. And it's a piece of domestic legislation that basically seeks to force the hand of the executive branch. And what it says is that if the president makes a determination that a country is either stockpiling chemical or biological weapons or has used them in violation of international law, then there is, if he makes such a determination, then there's a series of events that culminates in two potential rounds of sanctions that are mandated. And because evidently Donald Trump made such a determination when he kicked the Russian diplomats out of the U.S. over the Skripal affair. And it should be said once again that no evidence whatsoever has been provided of Russian involvement in this non-assassination.
That's right.
Never mind, the obvious that if Russia actually wanted to assassinate people, I have no doubt, one, that they would be dead, and two, that they wouldn't leave a glowing a super secret Soviet weapon trail leading back to the country. No evidence has been presented. No suspects have been named. There even hasn't been any type of real determination of how this Novichok super secret Soviet chemical agent was applied.
Right.
Never mind the dozen or so other countries that it has pretty much been shown could have it, including the United Kingdom itself,
right,
including the former countries of the Soviet Union.
Yeah, including in the United Kingdom, a laboratory that's like 9 miles away from the
away.
Site. Or
yeah, Porton Downs, right. Russia, just yesterday. Yesterday, the Russian Foreign Ministry spokesman, Maria Zakharova, made the demand back to the United Kingdom that Porton Downs be investigated.
You think?
Of course, that won't happen. The U.S. could have it because they closed down the facilities in Uzbekistan that were actually responsible for making it during the Soviet Union. Several Eastern European countries evidently developed the ability to produce it. So the idea that only Russia has it or only Russia could have used it is a complete fiction. In fact, one of the people who worked on the program, who has since defected in the United States, he wrote a book that you can get on Amazon that tells you how to make it. And he says that anyone with little more than a garage chemical laboratory in the back of their house could produce it. So now there's so many inconsistencies in this story of this Skripal non-assassination that is supposedly the cause of this. But President Trump evidently made such a determination. The Russians are responsible. You have to trust us on that. This latest round of sanctions evidently came as somewhat of a surprise to the Russian government. They didn't seem to know that it was in the works, but evidently the procedure's pretty much been on autopilot since Trump made that determination. After that, there were 60 days basically after the determination to begin the round of sanctions. Evidently, the Trump administration delayed an extra about 30 days. So it's actually a month past due. But the first mandated bit of sanctions is about dual use technology. This is about any type of scientific or engineering equipment that could potentially also have military use. Now, Obama already put sanctions on this type of thing, such that each individual export license from an American company to Russia has to be approved on a case-by-case basis. But this would set the automatic presumption of such export licenses to no.
Gotcha. Yeah.
And so, there would be a case by case possible exemption from this. The one notable exemption that they made, as always, is on the space.
I was going to ask
technology
about that. Since the U.S. can't put anything into orbit without hitching a rod
out of Russia. Astronauts to or from the space station,
right,
and has problem even putting satellites in
That's
orbit
right.
without the Russian Soyuz and Russian rocket
right.
engines.
That's right.
So, of course, right now, that is one of the things that the Russian Duma members are loudly demanding that Russia retaliate with if this all comes to pass, because they know that that would actually hurt the United States. Although the Putin administration has been very loath to touch space cooperation with the United States, one because the U.S. does pay. For this rights, and that helps keep the Russian space program afloat, something they can't seem to do with their own NASA, at least not with as regards to getting people into space, although it seems to me that China would make a much better partner, much more reliable partner for Russia with regards to space exploration and scientific work these days than the United States.
And it may well come to that, too, it appears.
We'll see if anything comes of that. But after this first round comes into effect, then there is a 90-day period. And then after that 90-day period, okay, so that starts August 22nd. 90 days after that, Russia is supposed to have by then apologized for using chemical weapons, made assurances that they will never do so again, and allow on-site inspections of supposed chemical facilities by some neutral third party. We would presume the Organization of Prohibition of Chemical Weapons, or possibly some other UN body. Now, here's the ironic thing about all of this. The U.S. and Russia had bilateral treaties to get rid of their chemical weapons stockpiles. Right. Yep. This also came about at the beginning of the 90s. Right. And Russia actually has completed its elimination.
Right.
It has eliminated all of its chemical weapons stockpiles and production facilities. And this has all been certified multiple times by the Organization of Prohibition of Chemical Weapons, including most recently in September of last year.
Right.
The U.S. has not fulfilled its own obligations under that treaty and has not destroyed its chemical weapons.
I think the word refuses is applicable here. They refuse to do it.
Yes, they it would seem that that is the case, although they haven't come right out and said that. They certainly do have the capability and have not followed through on doing that for whatever reason. I even find it hard to believe, hard to understand because of the absolute futility of using chemical weapons in any type of battlefield situation, the uselessness of them generally, and not to mention the international opprobrium and so on. But so if Russia doesn't do these things, which it has already quite frankly, you know, regards as an insult, and it will not, because it says that it has nothing to do with the Skripal affair. And one of the interesting things about this, the ongoing investigation, Russia's guilt was declared immediately before the investigation even began, but that this whole procedure, it is actually the United Kingdom, the British government, that is in violation of the Chemical Weapons Convention, because there is a procedure that all of the countries that are signatories of the convention, which obviously includes Russia and the United Kingdom, that if United Kingdom has a problem with an incident such as this, they are supposed to share information and sit down and have talks with the people they think are in violation of the convention in any way, which, of course, they have not done. They have not provided any of the requested information to the Russian government or anyone else, for that matter, regarding the samples, the chemical samples and so on. So that investigation is ongoing. But at the end of those 3 months, the provisions that are mandated by the Elimination Act are actually pretty severe, even for the two countries that don't do a lot of bilateral trade. And of course, the big problem with the United States sanctioning countries like Russia and Iran is not just the closing down of those countries, but the U.S. then using the commanding heights of the global financial system to block anyone else and to sanction anyone else willing to trade with those countries, as it has promised to do over both Iran and Russia. It has threatened to sanction EU companies that do trade with Iran and Russia over gas and other things.
That's right.
Also to deny international credit, which filters down through private institutions, and no one wants to make loans and somewhere, and that's where the actual problems come in. So, at the end of those 3 months, these conditions come in. One would be termination of assistance under the Foreign Assistance Act. Okay, no particular big deal there. Termination of arms sales and arms sales financing. Okay, we have to presume the U.S. doesn't buy too much other than space-related such from Russia. Denial of U.S. credit. Okay, we've already been working towards that, but that would be an absolute, complete, utter denial. Prohibition of the export of certain goods and technologies. Directs such weapons. One, opposition to the extension of multilateral development bank assistance, meaning preventing any type of World Trade Organization or IMF assistance. Prohibition of any U.S. bank loans, except loans for food or agricultural commodities. Further export prohibitions. Import restrictions, suspension of diplomatic relations, which seems to be an absolute total suspension of diplomatic relations, and the termination of air carrier landing rights. And because we have to presume that Russia would immediately reply in kind to that, it essentially means that direct flights between the U.S. and Russia, certainly on any U.S. or Russian carriers, would end. That you would probably, you would definitely have to take a third country carrier to get, and you would probably then have to go through a third country in order to travel from Russia to the United States.
Right.
Which is something that we didn't even, of course, see during the Cold War.
Right.
But hidden in those provisions there is what has been described in the press as a complete ban on all imports and exports, imports from and exports to Russia. A total bit.
You know, it's interesting looking at this. I mean, there are so many immediate contradictions. For example, I flew to Moscow in July on Aeroflot, which is one of the things they're talking about, banning Aeroflot from landing here.
It wouldn't just be Aeroflot, but of course that is largest Russian carrier.
Okay, I flew on a Boeing 777, a plane that goes for somewhere between $250 and $350 million each. It gets paid to Boeing when the airline either buys or leases them. Boeing gets a big, fat check. They hire employees out in Washington or wherever, out in the Pacific Northwest, to build these things. And so I'm assuming that a carrier like Aeroflot, if they're banned from the U.S., they're going to stop buying American planes. And so the impact is larger here than it is on the traffic between the U.S. and Russia, which isn't all that. There's that kind of contradiction. But here's an even bigger one. It was one thing when back in the 80s, for example, when the U.S. was really cranking down economic warfare on the Eastern Bloc, and you had so many things that were not available in the Soviet Union. I mean, they couldn't make everything there. They just rebuilt the economy again after World War II. And so some things you had to buy from the West, and they wouldn't take rubles. They wouldn't take a lot of currency. You could either do some swap deals, or there were things you couldn't get, like electronics from Japan and a lot of American goods. Well, now all those goods, and by the way, most of those technologies for PCs and stuff, they're from China. And China has already declared that it is a strategic partner of Russia. And so there's a whole different condition in which this economic warfare takes place than there was 20, 30, 40, 50 years ago.
Yeah, and it has to be said that in the last few years, Russia has already made steps towards decoupling its economy, in particular from the U.S., but from the West in general. So they've already made large strides in that direction, be
and
that
the currency
import
also.
Substitution,
right.
its own retaliatory sanctions on agricultural goods in the EU and so far. Just recently, Russia has almost completely divested itself of dollar reserves.
Right.
It has sold off some 80% of its dollar reserves and seems to be heading there with the rest of it. Right. And Russia was at the time, just a couple weeks ago, the sixth largest foreign holder of U.S. debt.
Right.
So not an insignificant total by any. And they've reinvested a lot of that in gold reserves.
Right.
As kind of a stormy weather scenario.
Yep.
But a big part of this, of course, is Russia's has, put retaliatory sanctions on the EU for the previous rounds of sanctions.
Right.
Americans like to believe that, you know, these sanctions that they have put on Russia have the country on its knees. Obama made the absolutely amazing statement that the Russian economy is in tatters before he left office.
Yeah.
And I'm like, where does he get this from?
I don't know. I mean he's been there.
What his aides were telling him. He also said the Russian economy doesn't produce anything, you know, except for things like Kaspersky and, you know, the largest exporter of nuclear reactors to the rest of the world, building pipelines in countries around the world. And bringing ferrying your astronauts' butts to and from the space station. Little things like that,
Which is something that actually occurred during Obama's time, wasn't it? Yeah. It was. Yeah. I think Obama was the first president who sat over a country that didn't have the capacity to put its own stuff in space.
Yeah. So in the first year of sanctions against Russia that started with Obama, in 2014. So in 2015, the total cumulative damage to the Russian economy, as assessed by the U.S. Treasury Department, of all Western sanctions against Russia, was to trim 1 to 1.5% off of Russia's GDP.
That's it.
Now, it was coupled with an oil price war with Saudi Arabia.
Right, that hurt.
Saudi Arabia overproduced. Now, that actually knocked a good 6-7% off of Russia's GDP for a few years until Saudi Arabia blinked.
Right.
And they gave up that oil price war, and they've since cooperated bilaterally to bring the price back up to a level that's good for both countries.
Yeah, and actually, even today, as a matter of fact, the Saudi Sovereign Wealth Fund is like scrambling for resources. Yeah. That's a headline.
They put themselves into bankruptcy. Now, that was targeted against both Russia and Iran. Venezuela was an added bonus, of course, for the U.S., right? But that actually did some damage. But the U.S. sanctions, they really – I mean, I know American politicians like to feel that they've done something – but they really didn't. And it really goes to the futility of sanctions as a foreign policy coercion tool. I mean, there's the whole question of whether these type of unilateral sanctions are even legal under international law.
For sure.
Most readings regard them as an act of aggression.
That's right. It's an act of war.
Which is the capital crime under international law, unless they are specifically approved by
the UN,
Security
Council.
That's right. Which, of course, obviously not the case. So,
and meanwhile, Russia, I mean, they're threatening tariff actions against Turkey.
Yeah.
Erdogan's talking about economic war, at the same time that they're trying to balance, the U.S. is trying to balance a relationship with Turkey is looking towards Russia strategically, and what are they doing? I mean, it's insane. They're declaring economic war against the whole world, China, everybody else.
Yeah, that's the thing, against China. Hundreds of billions of dollars worth of tariffs, potential and retaliation in kind against China. They're putting tariffs against their allies in South Korea across Europe, in South America, against Brazil. Some of the largest tariffs have actually gone against Canada.
Right.
Some against Mexico.
So there's like this whole pile of stuff. Look, on the one hand, you can see the economic reasons. If they want to sit across the table from China and play hardball to say, we're going to change the tariff structure, we're going to do this and that, there's at least some economic reason and logic to it. But if you're going to play that game strategically, you got to be on your game. And doing this to Russia makes absolutely no sense at all. There's no real compelling economic reason or political or strategic reason to do that.
Well, the U.S. is threatening sanctions against Turkey and India if they and potentially Saudi Arabia if they buy Russian weapons. They're threatening sanctions against EU companies for doing business with Iran and Russia. They're threatening essentially economic war with the whole world at once.
Right.
A great deal of it seems to be for domestic political reasons.
Right.
For Trump
fulfilling
his promises to the American workers, none of which will actually benefit them, of course.
Of course not.
But Russia has identified this and says it's mostly about domestic partisan political politics.
Right. which they, I guess they're expecting that it'll go away in November. Mark, thank you very much for your time. Pleasure as always.
Thanks for having me, Don.
Thanks. And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.